Roy here. Welcome to tonight's program. So last night we stayed up until, about 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning to watch the vote and Obama's speech afterwards. I have to say, now that I'm starting to understand some of the aspects of the Health Insurance Reform Act that was passed into law last night, I'm starting to question whether or not Obama is playing chess while the rest of us are playing checkers. Seriously. After having about 12 hours to figure out, or to read, not figure out, but to read various explanations of what the Health Insurance Reform Bill actually does, I'm starting to think, given the nature of a predatory capitalist society like ours, that perhaps Obama was smart in doing what he did, going as far as he did and doing it the way that he did it. So while I still hold out for single payer, while I still hold out for that sort of healthcare system, delivery system in this country, I think I'm going to stop being the dog in the manger where it concerns what was passed last night. Now, before you start sending me emails telling me that I'm not really a progressive or I'm not really a liberal or that somebody must have gotten to me, please understand, I would much rather have seen single payer. But as we talked about during the past year, many times this country is so chock-a-block with liars, misinformation, disinformation, a media that is totally irresponsible, a corporate-owned media. Anything short of what the House passed last night and the Senate passed earlier probably would have been impossible. So my attitude now is not a 180-degree change, but certainly 90, maybe 100-degree change. I want to see this work. I want to see this as the first step in this society working its way toward single-payer health care. And in that light, I think I've had enough of my own criticism where it concerns the intricacies and what this bill is all about. Is it going to hand 30 million new subscribers to insurance companies? Yes, it is. That's why insurance company stocks went up today on Wall Street, dragged the rest of Wall Street up with it, what, about 45 points up? Which should put to the lie, once and for all, these crazy SOBs on the right who keep talking about socialized medicine. You know, the healthcare companies just went, yeah! And everybody bought their stocks today. So is that a good thing or a bad thing? I don't know. I've always talked about the necessity when you have a system like ours that is predatory capitalism, the worst kind of capitalism other than slavery and serfdom. We have the third worst. Slavery being the worst, and then serfdom, and then us. The kind of predatory capitalism under which we operate in this country. But as bad as that capitalism is, the one thing that keeps it in check, or it used to anyway, was the government, regulatory agencies that were weakened over time, weakened because of Republican administrations who deliberately weakened them, but also because we Americans weren't paying attention as they were being weakened by the shills, the whores, no offense to sex workers, the pigs that got elected to Congress, who very slowly weakened the regulatory system. Maybe now we're beginning to understand how important it is to have regulations on every industry, every single industry, when you are dealing with the kind of murderous, predatory, dominionist capitalism that exists in this country. Ours is unique. I don't think in any other country do we have the kind of, not even communist China. They have a different system, kind of based on our model, but a little bit more bloodthirsty in a number of ways. But I'm going to back off from the criticisms of this bill. And again, if you want to send me emails and say, way to go, Malloy, you coward, you know, from the left. I'm not talking about you right-wing pigs. I don't care what you say. But the lefties, the liberals, the progressives who may feel like, oh, okay, well, there goes Malloy. Not that it matters. I mean, you know, this is a 25-cent radio program. What I say or do doesn't matter. But reserve your criticism, if you would, until you have a chance to see what happens here. There's some things that are going to happen immediately, and some things that are going to happen over the course of the next 3.5 years. So let's see how it works out. Now, as far as the Republicans are concerned, this was the brick wall that they hit at 80 miles an hour. The Republican Party is essentially over. I don't care what they're saying about it. They're gonna try to reverse this law, or that now Democrats are gonna lose, and the American people don't want this. Oh, stop it! With every single gun that they had, from psychopaths in Congress like John Boehner. And these freaks from the South and the West, these representatives and senators, with the dirty lies. Oh, by the way, hey, don't forget now, within about 6 months, you're going to get your card to go sign up for the death panel. Got to show up for the death panel. Don't forget that. Oh, and if you have a daughter, you have to bring her in because she's going to have to get forced abortions. All the lies and the filth that was dumped on this by these right-wing pigs, with the help of an insurance industry that is massive, millions, hundreds of millions of dollars poured into an effort to stop any reform. Now, keep in mind, like I said, I'm for single payer, and that's not what we have. But this is a first step in that direction as far as I'm concerned. And the right-wing slime in this country, the Becks and the Limbaughs and the O'Reillys and the Hannitys and the rest of these thugs, couldn't stop it. Which means what? With all their great big audiences and all their great big alliances and allegiances to corporate America, they had their asses handed to them. Every single right-winger, from the psychopathic Michelle Bachmann to crazy eye Michelle Malkin, to this goofy Ann Coulter, to all of these right-wingers that infest media. What happened, boys and girls? What happened? Just couldn't get it together, could you? Huh? So, Uncle Michael, shove your face in it. I wish you were here, because we have a new puppy, and he's still not house-trained, and I would love to shove your face in what the puppy keeps doing on the back porch. You punks, you didn't stop it, did you? And even out of the decent nature of the Democrats, more than 100 amendments. You know, the Republicans keep screaming and peeing their pants about, oh, it's an 1,800-page bill. Part of that is because 100 amendments in this bill were put there by Republicans. So let's see what happens in November. You're damn right. Let's wait and see what happens in November. When people go to the polls, what do you think they're going to do? You think they're going to say, well, I don't want any health care. I'm voting Republican. That's what I'm going to do. I don't want this coverage for my children. I don't want to have no caps on how much insurance companies have to do. I don't want this idea of pre-existing conditions taken away. I want it the way it was. I think I'll vote Republican. You really think that's going to happen? Yeah, please.
Everything is crumbling around me. Why does everything cost so much money? Could somebody please help out my family? My mom needs hearing aids, new shoulders and new legs. My dad needs a break, he works all day every day. My brother needs a place and a job where he can make enough money.
Get what you're living. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. And do you doubt it now that these teabag freaks are just Klansmen without the robes? They are homophobes. They are sick. I understand that today, even today, the Black Caucus, Congressional Black Caucus, members of the Congressional Black Caucus are receiving faxes with nooses and the N-word and drawings of Little Black Sambo and just, you know, racist filth. Barney Frank is being swamped with homophobic slurs. All of this can be traced back to two people, Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh. Now, these two cancers have metastasized through Radioland. Even though they are dead men walking, what they believe in is death and destruction, and they will be around for a while. There's no question about that. Although the next time Limbaugh tears one of his ligaments, he's going to have to go to Costa Rica for the treatment now. God forbid he should. That's what he said he would do anyway. He said he would go to Costa Rica for their medical. Of course, their medical system is completely single payer. It's socialized medicine. Rush Limbaugh is a lying bastard. He stinks. He's ugly. And he's a liar. Glenn Beck is certifiably nuts. Which is not to say that because of that, or in spite of that, they don't have a huge following. Both of them do, because there are people just like that who think that these two clowns walk on water or walk on something. I don't know. But the idea that the teabag movement had something to do with patriotism or the U.S. Constitution or decency or honesty or ethical behavior or morality is not only a joke, but it's so far from the truth as to render it just almost gibberish, meaningless gibberish. The teabag movement is doomed. Any movement in this country that's been based on racism or homophobia or anti-immigrant whatever it's been, those movements have eventually died. And I don't give a tinker's damn how many times these guys dress up in their little monkey suits and run around with their rifles in the woods. That doesn't mean a thing. It means absolutely nothing. Like I've said a million times, one squad of Marines and every single so-called patriot group in the country would disappear. They would run into the woods crying, sucking their thumbs with wet pants from peeing all over themselves once they saw a fully battle-ready squad of Marines coming after their large butts. So the teabag movement, though, with the kind of language encouraged by people like Boehner and Eric Cantor and the whole list of right-wingers in the Congress who don't belong there. They all belong working for predatory capitalist organizations someplace. Why don't you guys quit Congress and go find some third-world country you can try to screw and succeed in screwing until somebody lops your head off with a machete in a local insurgency because they're tired of being screwed over by, well, predatory capitalists. That's where you guys belong. That's where the Boehner crowd belongs. But anybody that harbored any doubts about the true nature of the teabag movement and its leadership, I'm sure that you finally came to your senses. They are racist pigs, every single one of them. Little old lady blue hairs that scream about the government keeping their hands off her Medicare. The retired pot-bellied white-haired men who just can't stand Obama because, well, you know, he's colored! And the birthers and all the rest of these piglets. Racist, homophobes, sick. Disgusting. There is not an ounce worth of decency or honor in the entire teabag movement. All you have to do as look at who's leading it. Look at the people who pump in the energy, if that's how it can be described, energy. Actually, it's toxic sludge. And it rolls out of these guys on radio and television, rolls out of their mouths every single day. And it's a dead-end street. With all that you pigs tried to do, death panels my ass. With all that you tried to do, you lost. You're not worth the powder to blow you to hell. You really aren't. So, teabag nutcases, amscray. You had your moment. You had your fun. Now, go back to your jobs at McBurger or whatever the hell you do, or go draw your unemployment checks and wait for Democrats to figure out a way to get you back to work. Like never before.
With a microphone, and that makes him dangerous. It's Mike Malloy.
I would walk 10 miles on my hands. 26 before the hour. Sam Stein writing a Huffington Post today about the abusive, derogatory, racist behavior directed at House Democrats by these teabaggers on Saturday left a number of lawmakers in shock. Sam writes, preceding the president's speech to a gathering of House Democrats, thousands of protesters descended around the Capitol to protest the passage of health care reform. Quickly turned into abusive heckling. A staffer for Representative James Clyburn, Democrat of South Carolina, told reporters that Representative Emanuel Cleaver, Democrat of Missouri, had been spat on. John Lewis, Democrat of Georgia, hero of the civil rights movement, was called an N-word. Barney Frank was called a faggot. Protesters shouted at him with deliberately lispy screams. Barney Frank just shrugged off the incident. Clyburn was incredulous, saying he had not witnessed such treatment since he was leading civil rights protests in South Carolina in the 60s. Clyburn said, quote, "It was absolutely shocking to me. This past Monday, I stayed at home to meet on the campus of Claflin University, where 50 years ago, as of last Monday, I led the first demonstrations in South Carolina, the sit-ins, and quite frankly, I heard some things today I've not heard since that day. I have heard people saying things today I've not heard since March 15, 1960, when I was marching to try to get off the back of the bus." Unbelievable. But very believable, because the people leading this movement are racist, they hate America, they will do anything to destroy this country, because in destroying the United States of America, they know that the replacement will be a kind of corporate fascism that will make these times look like salad days. That's what they want. That's what the multimillionaire right-wing Nazis in American media want. Limbaugh today. I'm going to play this for you. Four of Limbaugh and three of Beck, because I want you to hear how sick these scum are. Of course, I know you know that. But I think it was last week when Limbaugh said he was going to leave the country, and then he said, no, I didn't say I'd leave the country. I said I would leave the country for medical care. And then he said something about Costa Rica, until he's such an ignoramus. Somebody pointed out to him that Costa Rica has had for 50 years socialized medicine. So now Limbaugh is backpedaling on his promise to move to Costa Rica or to go there for treatment. It doesn't make any difference what he said, because he's a liar and he's a thug. but he said he would do one or the other if the health care reform bill passed.
It's funny. I can't tell you how many invitations I'm getting to go to Costa Rica today. From who thought that I said I would move to Costa Rica if we got health care passed. No, no, no. Once all this gets implemented, I'm going there for my health care. They're asking me to go ahead and move.
Going there for your health care? But Rush is socialized medicine. Here, it's run by insurance companies. You stupid, ignorant junkie. Limbaugh says the health care bill is not about health care or insurance. It's about wrecking the United States as we know it, turning everyone in this country into dependence on the government.
We didn't need this. This is not about health care.
Oh, okay.
This is not about insurance. This is about fundamentally wrecking and destroying the United States of America as it was founded.
Oh, yeah.
This is about turning as many people in this country as possible into dependents.
Oh.
Not for their wants, but for their very needs.
Oh. As it was founded, destroying the United States of America. Rush, that's already been destroyed, you ignoramus. Women have the right to vote. So do black folk. And there's no slavery. And guess what, ignoramus? Negroes are no longer 3/5 of a human being. What a jerk. Limbaugh explains the abortion provisions in the new bill. He calls Obama the most pro-abortion president in history and one who believes in baby murder, infanticide.
So while there was all this confusion over the weekend about abortion language that's supposedly been taken out, look it. Our guys on the floor of the House on Sunday night were exactly right. We have the most pro-abortion president in the history of the country. This is a guy who believes in infanticide. This is a guy who doesn't believe that babies who survive abortion should be saved.
Oh.
And he's going to send a letter, an executive order, to Bart Stupak, and Bart Stupak's going to sit there and think that a president who cannot tell the truth, who is the most pro-abortion president in history, is going to actually stand in the way of abortions taking place.
You can hear, you can just hear the thickening in Limbaugh's throat. You can hear it, can't you? You can hear a stroke coming. Oh, my goodness. Then what, Rush? Where will you have the paramedics take your corpulent body? Infanticide? No, no. This president has children, Rush. Unlike you. Of course, you have to copulate with a female in a certain situation in order to produce offspring. Thank God you haven't figured that out, you gross thug. Limbaugh calls the Democrats bastards and says they must be defeated in November. They need to be wiped out and chased out of town so the conservatives can get elected and repeal all the Democratic legislation that these leftist radicals forced on the country. Oh, Rush, have I got news for you, you slob.
The focus has to be on defeating Democrats in November.
Oh, yeah.
In these midterm elections. We have the people. We have the intellectual arguments. We have the common sense arguments. We have history, but they won yesterday. They won because they held Congress and the presidency.
Yeah,
and therein lies the lesson.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We need to defeat these bastards.
Oh, bastards.
We need to wipe them out.
We need
to chase them out of town.
Chase them.
But we need to do more than that.
But you can't run.
We need to elect conservatives.
Whoa!
If there are Republican primaries, elect conservatives.
Whoa!
And then defeat the Democrats.
Yeah.
Every last one of them.
Yes.
And then we start the repeal process.
Yes.
And by repeal, I mean use every single legislative and bureaucratic tactic we can muster to obstruct, derail, and defeat them.
Amen.
As you have seen, the law will not stop them.
Oh, no.
The Constitution will not stop them.
No, never.
Hoping that they will do the right thing
will not stop them
because their definition of the right thing
is what?
Has nothing in common with ours.
That you got that right.
They must, my friends,
Listen.
Be hounded out of office.
Listen.
Every single Democrat who voted for this needs to know, safe district or not, they are going to be exposed and hassled and chased from office. We now have leftist radicals in charge of your health care decisions.
Ooh.
Rather than doctors.
Leftist radicals. And they're all on Wall Street. And they're in hospitals and doctor's offices. You sick freak. You can hear those fat globules in his throat just kind of closing in on his vocal cords. Can you hear that? Limbaugh is a cartoon character. An absolute cartoon. Medical care in this country is now in the hands of leftist radicals. Piggy, it's in the same hands it was in last year and 5 years ago. Same exact hands, Piggy. What are you talking about? And then there is the suicide boy. What's Beck going to do when he botches his suicide? Which is coming. It is coming. As surely as the Democrats whipped the Republicans' butts last night, Glenn Beck will attempt suicide at some point. And like I've said before, if there is a God, he'll do it on his television program. But Beck, what did Beck have to say on his radio program this morning? What did Beck say indeed? We have three little chunks of sound from Suicide Boy that we're going to play for you when we come back. These guys are incredible, aren't they? They're very wealthy. Very wealthy. They are cultural icons in America. Now, I know I get some emails from you little right-wing pants peers saying, well, how many radio stations are you on? How many listeners do you have? Not as many as Beck. Not as many as Limbaugh, you teabag freaks. It's astonishing to hear these people. Beck, Suicide Boy, when we come back.
Approaches. The killing chill takes over here. His victims will not know. Lust of death's possession will overtake his psycho mind. He won't be happy till he smells the fear. He's the angel of death. Angel of death. He's the angel of death.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. So this immoral Rush Limbaugh uses his program today to lay out the battle plan for the racists who still listen to him. And then Glenn Beck steps into the breach. On his radio program this morning, he calls the Democrats radical revolutionaries that create chaos but don't know how to govern. So they get more and more dangerous to Americans, the real Americans. And then Beck plays a clip that mocks Patrick Kennedy's emotional speech about the realization of his father's dream on health care. Oh, Glenn, you just aroused
me. These people are radical revolutionaries. They know how to create chaos, but they don't know how to govern.
Oh.
It's almost like they don't know how to govern, which means, it's kind of a spooky thing for us, which means they have to get more and more dangerous to us. Do you have just a quick taste of Just the part where he's crying.
And this president stood by it. I salute President Obama.
Uh-oh.
He has been the president and even more than my father could have ever imagined. And this speaker that I've supported, Speaker Pelosi, worked hard. She's an unsung hero. Her ambition is for children in this country, all of whom are going to get covered under this bill. And it's children. My hat is off to her.
Yeah.
She's really provided moral and political leadership and worked.
Oh, you know what's really great is when you can get your moral leadership from Nancy Pelosi and then get your praise of that moral leadership from a Kennedy, you know we're headed in the right direction.
And you gross pig, when you can get your little tears working up in your radio program by putting Vicks in your eyeballs. Isn't it fun, Glenn? Isn't it fun being a multimillionaire and being able to just continue to shear the sheep? Don't you love it? Don't you just love it? Go ahead. Who else are you going to mock? Let's see. I'm sure we'll have someone here that you can mock. Anyway, he then goes on to say the Democrats are the enemy of families and jobs and health care and schools and businesses and our country and your mama. And his followers are going to do some ass kicking in November. Oh, yes, Glenn. Sure they are. Beck says Democrats were looking for handouts, but his followers don't. And so they will win in November because their bucket has a hole in it, and they can't have beer or something.
There seems to be an enemy of our family, our jobs, our schools, our business, our health care, our country. So you know what? We're going to put everything else on hold, and we're going to do some old-fashioned ass-kicking come November. So bring it on, progressives. Bring it on. Because you've just woken a sleeping giant. And while all of your buddies, all of your army is standing in line going, yeah. I'd like more, please. Yeah. Please help me out. Please, I'd like more. I don't have enough. I can't do it on our own. Oh, we can. We can do it as individuals. We can do it as a group.
Like you have.
We believe in the power of the individual.
Yeah.
We believe in the power of entrepreneurial spirit. We believe in the power of our own minds.
Yes!
We believe we can kick your ass down the street.
Woo-hoo!
You need somebody else.
Ooh.
We don't.
Oh.
Your bucket's about to have a hole in it.
Oh, no.
And you ain't gonna buy no beer.
Because
we ain't gonna pay for it very, very soon.
You sick twit. Oh, my God. Every time, you know, I recommend that people listen to Beck so you can hear what it sounds like. He's going to kill himself on the air. Thank you, Jesus. And when he does, you will have an audio history of how someone goes totally insane. In the meantime, though, as he exhorts his followers to send him more money, buy more of the products. What does he advertise now? Gold? Dirt? What does this moron sell? We got time for the last one. Beck then plays some Soviet-style music and mocks cancer patients.
Comrades!
Oh, there is great news from the motherland. Formerly known as the United States of America. Universal health care is here. All we have to do is put those pesky insurance companies out of business, but that's going to happen quickly because now everybody's got to get... I mean, now, what do they call it, comrade? The risky insurance thing? These are the high-risk groups now that are going to be accepted by the insurance companies. Finally, everyone will have health care. So if you have cancer and you walk in and you're coughing up a lung, finally the insurance company cannot take you and say, well, you're too high of a risk because you're coughing up a cancerous lung.
It's finally coverage for the proletariat, comrade.
It is, and I think that is... Comrades, our day of glory is finally here!
Isn't that nice? Maybe Beck, is anybody in Beck's family still alive, or have they all committed suicide? Maybe one of them will, as Beck puts it so graciously, be coughing up a lung. Maybe Beck will. Maybe Beck will be coughing up some other body part. You never know, Glenn. It's astonishing. It's astonishing. A baby step toward universal health care in this country. And these Nazis are acting as though... And he almost caught himself. Did you notice that? Because the crazy part is, this means that the health insurance industry, for the time being, is going to have a big bonus! Millions of people will be signing up! I wonder if Glenn took a look at the stock market today and saw that the health insurance stocks rose, Glenn, and you call it Soviet-style communism, you half-wit. The only thing stupider than you are your listeners. The hour. I want to share with you what Krugman said today. He writes in the New York Times, the day before Sunday's health care vote, President Obama gave an unscripted talk to House Democrats. Near the end, he spoke about why his party should pass reform. This is what he said, quote, every once in a while, a moment comes where you have a chance to vindicate all those best hopes that you had about yourself, about this country, where you have a chance to make good on those promises that you made. And this is the time to make true on that promise. We're not bound to win, but we are bound to be true. We're not bound to succeed, but we are bound to let whatever light we have shine. End quote. And on the other side, here's what Newt Gingrich, the Republican former Speaker of the House, a man celebrated by many in his party as an intellectual leader. This is what Gingrich had to say. Quote, if Democrats pass health reform, they will have destroyed their party, much as Lyndon Johnson shattered the Democratic Party for 40 years by passing civil rights legislation. I'd argue that Mr. Gingrich is wrong about that. Proposals to guarantee health insurance are often controversial before they go into effect. Ronald Reagan famously argued that Medicare would mean the end of the American dream, American freedom. But always popular once enacted. But that's not the point I want to make today. And instead, I want you to consider the contrast. On one side, the closing argument was an appeal to our better angels, urging politicians to do what's right, even if it hurts their careers. On the other side, callous cynicism. Think about what it means to condemn health reform by comparing it to the Civil Rights Act. Who in modern America would say that LBJ did the wrong thing by pushing for racial equality? Actually, we know who. The people at the Tea Party protest who hurled racial epithets at Democratic members of Congress on the eve of the vote. And that cynicism has been the hallmark of the whole campaign against reform. Yeah, a few conservative policy intellectuals, after making a show of thinking hard about the issues, claim to be disturbed by reform's fiscal implications, but were strangely unmoved by the clean bill of fiscal health from the Congressional Budget Office, or to want stronger action on costs, even though this reform does more to tackle health care costs than any previous legislation. For the most part, however, opponents of reform didn't even pretend to engage with the reality, either of the existing health care system or of the moderate centrist plan, very close in outline to the reform Mitt Romney introduced in Massachusetts, that Democrats were proposing. Instead, the emotional core of opposition to reform was blatant fear-mongering, unconstrained either by the facts or by any sense of decency. It wasn't just the death panel smear. It was racial hate-mongering. Like a piece in Investor's Business Daily declaring that health reform, quote, is affirmative action on steroids, deciding everything from who becomes a doctor to who gets treatment on the basis of skin color, end quote. It was wild claims about abortion funding. It was the insistence that there's something tyrannical about giving young working Americans the assurance that health care will be available when they need it, an assurance that older Americans have enjoyed ever since Lyndon Johnson, who Mr. Gingrich considers a failed president, ever since Lyndon Johnson pushed Medicare through over the howls of the Republicans. And let's be clear. The campaign of fear hasn't been carried out by a radical fringe unconnected to the Republican establishment. No, no. On the contrary, that establishment has been involved and approving all the way. Politicians like Sarah Palin, who was, let us remember, the Republican Party's vice presidential candidate, eagerly spread the death panel lie, and supposedly reasonable moderate politicians like Senator Chuck Grassley refused to say it was untrue. On the eve of the big vote, Republican members of Congress warned that freedom dies a little bit today and accused the Democrats of totalitarian tactics, which I believe means the process known as voting. Without question, the campaign of fear was effective. Health reform went from being highly popular to wide disapproval, although the numbers have been improving lately. But the question was, would it actually be enough to block reform? And the answer is no. The Democrats have done it. The House has passed the Senate version of health reform, and an improved version will be achieved through reconciliation. This is, of course, a political victory for President Obama and a triumph for Nancy Pelosi, the House Speaker. But it is also a victory for America's soul. In the end, a vicious, unprincipled fear offensive failed to block reform. This time, fear struck out. Paul Krugman of today's New York Times. And wouldn't you know it, the piece of human waste who screamed baby killer at Bart Stupak. Bart Stupak, who's about as anti-abortion as you can get. That thug was, oh, here's a surprise, a Texas Republican. Oh, no, really? Randy Neugbauer or something. He identified himself this afternoon as the person who said, baby killer! However, like a typical Republican, cowardly, will not take responsibility even for what he actually said, every single Republican office holder, every single Republican commentator, every single conservative in America today is first a coward and secondly a liar. So here's Randy, the Texas Republican, saying that the phrase, it's a baby killer, was in reference to the agreement reached by the Democratic leadership. He claims, he said, it's a. But when you listen to the recording, there's no it's a. He was screaming baby killer at Stupak. But like the coward that this large, rubbery-looking freak is, he's a liar. He's a liar. You didn't say it's a baby killer, you thug, you punk. Mr. Neugbauer's statement said, quote, I've apologized to Mr. Stupak and also apologized to my colleagues for the manner in which I expressed my disappointment about the bill. The House chamber is a place of decorum and respect. The timing and tone of my comment last night was inappropriate. Man. a Texan Republican. Of course. Of course. Well, my good friend Sheila sent me some health care facts. 10 things every American should know about health care reform, about what has been passed. Number one, once it's fully implemented, over 95% of Americans will have health insurance coverage, including 32 million who are currently uninsured. Two, health insurance companies will no longer be allowed to deny people coverage because of pre-existing conditions or to drop coverage when people become sick. Think about that. Three, just like members of Congress, individuals and small businesses who can't afford to purchase insurance on their own will be able to pool together and choose from a variety of competing plans with lower premiums. Reform will cut the federal budget deficit by $138 billion over the next 10 years and a whopping $1.2 trillion in the following 10 years. Number six, seniors on Medicare will pay less for their prescription drugs because the legislation closes the donut hole gap in existing coverage. Seven, by reducing health care costs for employers, reform will create or save more than 2.5 million jobs over the next decade. Eight, Medicaid will be expanded to offer health insurance coverage to an additional 16 million low-income people. Nine, instead of losing coverage after they leave home or graduate from college, young adults will be able to remain on their family's insurance plans until age 26. And number 10, community health centers would receive an additional $11 billion, doubling the number of patients who can be treated regardless of their insurance or ability to pay. Wait, where's the death panels?
So you don't have to. It's More Mike Malloy.
It's 21 past the hour. Oh, also in the health vote, may or may not have something to do with health, indirectly. Along with the major health care legislation, the House Sunday approved a major revamping of federal student loan programs that will now eliminate fees paid to private banks to act as intermediaries. Instead, the government is going to expand a direct lending program, a step that the Congressional Budget Office said would save taxpayers $61 billion over 10 years, and use the money to increase Pell Grants for students. The Republicans didn't want this either. They hate America. They're scum. The student loan bill is part of Obama's education agenda, and it was included in the budget reconciliation measure that also made final revisions to the Senate-passed health care bill. Now, what it does, the bill sets automatic annual increases in the maximum Pell Grant scheduled to rise to $5,975 by 2017 from $5,350 this year. The new Pell initiative also includes $13.5 billion to cover a shortfall caused by a steep rise in the number of Americans enrolling in college and seeking financial aid during the recession. The student loan bill will spend an additional $36 billion on Pell Grants over 10 years. Private banks lobbied against this, of course, because it eliminates a long-flowing source of revenue for them. Not for the students, not for the universities, not for the economy, but for them. The Republicans don't want educated people. You can tell that by listening to these rat bastards. Good Lord. From vetvoice.com, Richard Allen Smith writes about, of all the congressional elections in 2006, there were two that were particularly interesting. In Virginia, an incumbent Republican senator who weaseled out of service in Vietnam was endorsed by the VFW's Political Action Committee over a former Navy secretary who was awarded the Navy Cross while serving as a Marine Corps officer in Vietnam. Also in a House race, that same Political Action Committee, the VFW, endorsed a Republican candidate with no service record over an Iraq veteran who left two legs on the battlefield. Huh? Does that surprise you? It shouldn't. The VFW PAC operates as little more than a subsidiary of the Republican Party, as does the leadership of the VFW. And on Sunday, that organization issued a statement towing the Republican line on the health care vote. Of course, in order to tow that line, the VFW had to lie. Thomas Tradewell Sr., who leads the 2.1 million member of VFW, said, quote, "The president and the Democratic leadership are betraying America's veterans," end quote. Now, he and the VFW went on to tell all kinds of lies. So in response to that, there was a statement from the Secretary of the Veterans Administration, Eric Shinseki, former four-star, was he four-star or three-star general? Combat veteran. He is now the Secretary of Veterans Affairs. And he issued a statement, and I want to share it with you, but we got to take a break here pretty quick. He writes, "As Secretary of Veterans Affairs, I accepted the solemn responsibility to uphold our sacred trust with our nation's veterans. Fears that veterans' health care will be undermined by the health reform legislation are unfounded. I'm confident the legislation being voted on today will provide the protections afforded our nation's veterans and the health care they have earned through their service. The President and I stand firm in our commitment to those who serve and have served in our armed forces. We pledge to continue to provide the men and women in uniform and our veterans the high-quality health care they've earned." And it goes on, but the point is that even the VFW leadership, which is another... just a little whore, no offense to sex workers, to the Republican Party. They lie. They lie about everything. 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 Defense Secretary Robert Gates said in a statement, quote, "The TRICARE military health plan meets the standards set by the health care reform bill the House of Representatives passed last night." They lie about everything. They're dead meat, every one of them. The Republicans are dead meat, trust me.
Because without dissent, it's not America. Here's Mike Malloy.
One more thing to share with you. Then we're going to open up the lines for the third hour of the program and the remains of this hour. And hopefully, we're going to switch focus a bit now that the Republicans have been utterly humiliated and defeated and sent to their rooms. But the icing on the cake comes from a Republican speechwriter for the Republican Party for years, David Frum. This is what he wrote under the heading Waterloo. Conservatives and Republicans today suffered their most crushing legislative defeat since the 1960s. It's hard to exaggerate the magnitude of the disaster. Conservatives may cheer themselves that they'll compensate for today's expected vote with a big win in November elections, but one, it's a good bet that conservatives are over-optimistic about November. By then, the economy will have improved, and the immediate goodies in the health care bill will be reaching key voting blocks. And two, so what? Legislative majorities come and go. This health care bill is forever. A win in November is very poor compensation for this debacle now. So far, I think a lot of conservatives will agree with me. Now comes the hard lesson. A huge part of the blame for today's disaster attaches to conservatives and Republicans ourselves. At the beginning of this process, we made a strategic decision. Unlike, say, Democrats in 2001, when President Bush proposed his first tax cut, we would make no deal with the administration, no negotiations, no compromises, nothing. We were going for all the marbles. This would be Obama's Waterloo, just as health care was Clinton's in 1994. Okay, the hardliners overlooked a few key facts. Obama was elected with 53% of the vote, not Clinton's 42%. The liberal bloc within the Democratic Congressional Caucus is bigger and stronger than it was in 1993-94. And, of course, the Democrats also remember their history and also remember the consequences of their 1994 failure. This time, when we, the Republicans, went for all the marbles, we ended with none. Could a deal have been reached? Who knows? But we do know that the gap between this plan and traditional Republican ideas is not very big. The Obama plan has a broad family resemblance to Mitt Romney's Massachusetts plan. It builds on ideas developed at the Heritage Foundation in the early 1990s that formed the basis for Republican counterproposals to Clinton care in 1993-1994. Barack Obama badly wanted Republican votes for his plan. Could we have leveraged his desire to align the plan more closely with conservative views? To finance it without redistributive taxes on productive enterprises, without weighing so heavy on small business, without expanding Medicaid? Too late now. They're all the law. No illusions, please. This bill will not be repealed. Even if Republicans score a 1994-style landslide in November, how many votes could we muster to reopen the donut hole and charge seniors more for prescription drugs? How many votes to reallow insurers to rescind policies when they discover a pre-existing condition? How many votes to banish 25-year-olds from their parents' insurance coverage? And even if the votes were there, would President Obama sign such a repeal? We followed the most radical voices in the party and the movement, and they led us to abject and irreversible defeat. There were leaders who knew better, who would have liked to deal, but they were trapped. Conservative talkers on Fox and talk radio had whipped the Republican voting base into such a frenzy that deal-making was rendered impossible. How do you negotiate with somebody who wants to murder your grandmother? Eh? Or more exactly, with somebody whom your voters have been persuaded to believe wants to murder their grandmother? I've been on a soapbox for months now about the harm that our overheated talk is doing to us. Yes, it mobilizes supporters, but by mobilizing them with hysterical accusations and pseudo-information, overheated talk radio has made it impossible for representatives to represent and elected leaders to lead. The real leaders are on television and radio. And they have very different imperatives from people in government. Talk radio thrives on confrontation and recrimination. When Rush Limbaugh said that he wanted President Obama to fail, he was intelligently explaining his own interests. What he omitted to say, but what is equally true, is he also wants Republicans to fail. If Republicans succeed, if they govern successfully in office and negotiate attractive compromises out of office, Rush's listeners get less angry. And if they are less angry, they listen to radio less and hear fewer ads for Sleep Number beds. So today's defeat for free market economics and Republican values is a huge win for the conservative entertainment industry. Their listeners and viewers will now be even more enraged, even more frustrated, even more disappointed in everybody except the responsibility-free talkers on television and radio. For them, it's mission accomplished. For the cause they purport to represent, it's Waterloo, all right. Hours. Well spoken, David. David Frum, Republican speechwriter, who puts it pretty much the way it should be and where it belongs. Now the smoke has cleared, and it's evident that Obama's health care plan is no more a radical left idea than the moon is made of green cheese. As a matter of fact, it's barely to the right of center, or to the left of center. Hell, it might be to the right of center. It's a very centrist idea. It does not satisfy progressives or liberals. It sure as hell doesn't satisfy a democratic socialist like me. But you know what? Again, I'll say it again. If Obama's playing chess and the rest of us are playing checkers, good for him. Good for him. He took the first step. He got something done. And I read you that list that Sheila sent me, 10 things that this healthcare bill will do. And surprisingly, there's no death panel. Oh, my goodness. Where's the death panel, Sarah? Hey, Chuck Grassley, you cretin bastard. Where's the death panel? Where's the forced abortions? Ooh! Where's the infanticide? So congratulations to the pig man and the suicide boy and the bunny ranch parrot, Sean Hannity. Congratulations, boys. And Loofah Man, O'Reilly, congratulations. You did a great job. You took your party and ran it right into the mud. Good for you. Good for you, boys. Keep talking. What's next? Huh? What's next? When Obama tries in his moderate centrist way to put some restraints on Wall Street, what are you pigs going to say then? He's destroying capitalism! He's going to make your 401ks disappear. He's going to take all of your savings. He's going to drive even more jobs out of the country. He's going to do this. He's going to do that. And then when that legislation passes, you punks can sit around and scratch your heads or whatever part of your anatomy you scratch and say, gee, you know, maybe nobody's listening to us. At least nobody with any power or sense or honesty. Wow. I just desperately want to talk a little bit about what's going on in Israel, what Netanyahu is doing. Adolf Netanyahu. Or BB Hitler, call him whatever you want. What a bastard. Oh, we do, don't we? Oh, my goodness. Well, let's get... Blue is in Queensland, Australia. Hey, Blue.
Hello, Mike.
Hi, how you doing?
Pretty good, thanks.
Good. Well, I guess you heard we have not socialized medicine, but we have a first step towards something that may or may not look like what you all have eventually.
Well, I was telling your wife it's pretty funny actually to watch the floundering around that's going on there. We've had Medicare here in Australia for a long time,
mm-hmm.
And I was going to invite you and your wife and your kid to come down to a free country where we have universal health care, where we've got an intelligent Prime Minister, Kevin Rudd. We've got wonderful weather, and you don't have to pay the insurance companies trillions of dollars every year to get what you should have had all along.
You know, eventually, I've got to make a trip. All of us, the Malloy family's got to make a trip to Australia. And I also want to go to Tasmania and also to New Zealand. Can you hold on a second?
Yeah.
All right, let me put you on hold. We'll come right back to Blue in Queensland, Australia. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
Truth seekers, gather around the campfire. It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 10 before the hour. 10 before the hour, we're talking with Blue in Queensland, Australia. All right, where were we, Blue? I'd love to make a trip down there. Someday we will.
Yeah, well, I was saying before, I was talking to your wife, and last time we were talking, I was cut off. I think the string broke on the tin cans. You know, it's a long way, 10,000 miles.
Mm-hmm.
But it's rather amusing to sit here down in Australia and watch what's going on in the United States. And most of us down here, you know, we can't quite believe what's happening there. I've noticed over the last day or so, I've been listening to some of the radio from the United States, and there's sort of a note of triumph going on, and I'm wondering what that's all about. I don't quite understand it, because it sounds to me as though what's really happening is that you're going to be paying a hell of a lot more for not very much more than you're getting already, which is nothing. I don't really understand it.
Well, no, that's not actually true. That's how it's being presented. If you listen to American radio, you hear mostly right wing or conservative.
No, I think I know the difference by now.
Right, but in this country, I don't know where you would hear something other than the conservative point of view. There are websites that will give you a breakdown. It would take too long to do it now. I gave about 10 points earlier this evening. I frankly, and I've been saying this from the get-go, that my feeling is that single-payer health care, where the government, there's no deductibles, no copays, nothing. The government, through taxes, handles all the financing. You go to a private doctor, a private hospital, whoever you want to go to, but it's handled through through government payment. That's my first choice. My second choice was a public option, where in addition to private insurance companies, people could purchase their health insurance through the government the way, in a manner, not purchase it through the government, but in a manner as our elected senators and representatives do. None of that happened. This is the United States. We've had predatory capitalism of a sort that other so-called capitalist countries don't have. Most English-speaking and not English-speaking countries have restrictions on capitalism that are not extant here. And as a result, any little victory at all in this country is what you're hearing all the positive talk about. To fight against these bastards in corporate America and to gain any kind of a toehold is a victory of sorts. Now, it wouldn't seem so to our Canadian listeners. Have the same take on all this as you do. They're just amazed at all the discussion that goes on here, the charges and countercharges. We have a pretty big listening audience in Canada, and their attitude is pretty much the same as yours. What the hell's all the shouting about? You all don't have anything. You just got a couple of crumbs thrown your way, and you're acting like you just got a victory.
Yeah, right.
The truth is, though, Blue, that is a victory. And now it is up to the American people through their representatives to push and keep pushing for reform on this brand new law.
Yeah. Well, I had something on a more personal note because last time we were talking, as I say, it was cut off. I don't know what happened there, but my wife kept on listening, and she said, you know, Mike has a whole list of questions for you that she wants to ask, and that he wants to ask, and so she wrote them down, and she said, you know, a few minutes after the break, you know, after you stopped talking, he said, the next time you call in, Blue, you will have forgotten all these questions that I'm asking.
No, I forgot them.
So as a point of honor, I've got to respond to that because...
all right, let her rip.
In point of fact, I did forget, actually, but she wrote them down faithfully. Thank you, Cherie, very much.
Yeah.
Somebody called in, some woman named Elaine called in, wants me to adopt her. And my wife is a killer. She's a trained killer,
right? So that
and I don't think that would work very well.
No, that wouldn't work. That one's off the list.
But you might send me a picture on the internet on this, you know, sort of under the, just in case.
Just in case.
I don't know what Zach was all about from the University of Texas in Austin. He said something about Robin Davidson, the Camel Girl. Which, and I'm actually familiar with that. I know all about, well, not all about, but, you know, she was the girl who went across the desert on the camel.
Uh-huh.
The Droba's Wife stories, I'm a city lad, you know, I came from Melbourne.
Right.
And the first time I saw a kangaroo was in a zoo. I'd never seen a kangaroo in the wild till I was about 11 years old, so I don't know anything about the Droba's Wife stories. I'm not sure what that's all about.
Right.
Aborigines, one of the first officers I fly with is an Australian Aborigine, of Australian Aborigine descent.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if that counts, but he's a better pilot than I am. And most of the time we just pretend that, you know, I'm the one that's doing the flying.
Right.
What were the others here?
I can't read your writing. I'm sorry.
Yeah. Something about somebody called in about Gallipoli and the Anzacs.
Right.
You know, and we have a parade every year, the Anzac Day Parade.
Right.
And your caller was quite right. It was a total disaster, and it was more or less engineered by Winston Churchill.
It was, yes.
And a whole bunch of people were slaughtered really for no purpose, but that's what war is all about. I mean, you people are experiencing that now in Iraq and Afghanistan.
We are indeed.
But there was a very good film made with Mel Gibson, of all people. I'm not very fond of him, but...
I think a lot of people in this country saw Gallipoli. It was... I've seen it, I think, twice, and every time it just leaves me in utter... It just leaves me in tears.
Yes, good film.
I can't believe... Hey, Blue, we're out of time.
All right, man.
We have to break for commercials. Thank you so much for calling. Always good to hear from you. Call again, please.
All right.
All right, sir. Take care. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. We must do a bit from Prairie 2 here, our economic affairs correspondent, and then on to your phone calls. So, un momento, por favor. Bruce writes, they're not gone, they're just buying brown shirts. J.P. Morgan economists are floating the notion that the U.S. dollar rally is over. If that's true, and it's always really been a question of when and not if, then the wild ride could start in earnest. The U.S. dollar has only been, quote, strong, end quote, as other countries have been trying to cope with China tying the value of its currency to the U.S. dollar. But this has been building a bubble that will burst at some point. Throw in the fact that those credit derivatives we've heard so much about have not gone away, and banks around the world have been buying them to try to shield themselves from wild currency swings. This sets up the big Wall Street banks for another crisis requiring another massive government bailout. The Obama administration apparently felt it had no choice but to continue the Bush policy of guaranteeing the big banks since they threatened to plunge the world into total chaos. With the U.S. government chock-a-block with Bush crime family appointees now, trying to deal with such a crisis would be a heck of a job, Brownie, times a thousand. Thanks to the Republican Senate blocking Obama's appointments and any banking reform, little has changed. The real problem is that the money doesn't exist to do another bailout. It didn't really exist to do the last one, but everybody went along with the illusion. This time, the magic may not work. The consequences of the U.S. dollar collapse are unpredictable. In history, one of the first things that happens when the dominant currency collapses is that international trade stops overnight as a realignment of power occurs. U.S. businesses are already finding China increasingly difficult to deal with as it becomes more apparent China doesn't want or need or perhaps fears U.S. involvement in its economy. After the last crisis in 2008, we lost 11 million jobs as another big chunk of our economy was outsourced by the multinational corporations that pass themselves off as the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. The 27 companies that really fund the U.S. Chamber of Commerce create what is often described as the shadow government. Bush pushed the privatization of government functions and the concentration of all business activity into the hands of these overwhelming monopolies. The orchestration of the teabag rallies was a pilot project funded by these same corporations. Some liberal pundits are predicting the end of the teabag movement with their failure to block health insurance reform. Rumors of their demise are greatly exaggerated. Rush, Glenn Beck, and the others are predicting the end of the world now that this socialist takeover has begun, and their rhetoric is becoming increasingly violent. To these people, empty Walmarts would prove they were right all along. Prairie2.com. His website is prairie2.com. And he emailed something to me earlier this evening when I was talking about, you know, death to the teabaggers. They have met their Waterloo. Earlier this evening, Bruce wrote, it's a mistake to assume that people who have nothing better to do than take a free bus trip to a teabagger protest are the real problem. Sarah Palin got almost as many votes as Obama. There's a huge potential base for extreme right-wing movements in this country. The teabaggers are just setting the tone. That's not to say things are hopeless, but enough people have to be aware of the truth of what is happening to marginalize the nutcases. I think what he's saying there is beware. The teabaggers are more than just these ridiculous, ignorant morons who show up at these rallies. Okay. Mark is in Louisville, Kentucky. Hey, Mark.
Hey, what's up, Mike?
You are.
Hey, I noticed a pattern with the teabaggers or people of their ilk is they always seem to, you know, marginalize human beings or humanity itself.
Uh-huh.
there's never any kind of like, I mean, it's not like you see an intelligent, rational argument. It's always name calling, marginalizing people, denigrating sick people.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't understand how we fall for it.
Well, we don't.
Or they, or whoever. I don't understand how something like that can gain such momentum.
I think it's an indication of the selfishness that is built into capitalism. Capitalism is a competitive system. It's a zero-sum game. If I'm going to win, you have to lose, and vice versa. This idea of pulling oneself up by one's bootstraps, which is a bunch of hog snot, I don't think there's ever been anyone in the history of any economy who's ever done that, unless they were the king. But because capitalism is a murderous, anti-family, anti-life economic system, it is designed to, there are aspects of it designed to keep people ignorant. Because if people ever did really, I mean, just common folk, figure out that the problem is not, they're not praying enough to Jesus, or there are not enough conservatives in the Congress, or not enough liberals or whatever, but the real problem is capitalism, predatory capitalism, then the country would open up into bloody revolution.
Or they're not working hard enough, or...
Yeah, yeah. So that's why people like Beck and Limbaugh and Hannity and O'Reilly are paid millions upon millions upon millions of dollars every year, is to get on the air in this country. And that's why you find them coast to coast, border to border, in a program like mine, fairly limited in terms of radio stations, although you can listen to us nationally on Sirius or XM, so the number of radio stations really doesn't matter. But that's the reason they're paid so much and they're so widespread. Their function, the function of Beck and Limbaugh and O'Reilly and Hannity and the rest of them, is to provide protection to these predatory capitalist organizations while they continue to steal everything that we have, our lives, our livelihoods, our children, our spouses, our dignity, our freedom, everything. That's why the Hannitys and Limbaughs and Becks are paid so much, because their job is critical. If we had a real open media, if we had even a balance in talk radio or talk television, we wouldn't be in the shape that we're in, but we don't have that balance. 95% of everything you hear on the air is skewed to the right, and 95% of that is skewed to the hard right, and probably 80% of that is skewed towards corporatism or fascism.
Well, one thing that's kind of worrisome is it seems like natural selection favors more aggressive and predatory practices.
Not necessarily so. Remember, the phrase survival of the fittest does not mean survival of the strongest. It means survival, you're guaranteed survival as an organism if you can fit in to your environment. Some great big hulking dinosaur that can't breathe because a meteorite has just hit the earth dies. Because the beast couldn't fit into the environment. So survival of the fittest doesn't mean the strongest, Mark. It means the organisms that can fit in, that can survive. And Republicans, conservatives, teabaggers cannot survive on their own. They simply can't. I have to leave it there. Thanks, Mark.
the primal scream you suppress. Embrace your inner liberal warrior with Mike Malloy.
It's about 22 past the hour. Mike is in Chicago. Hey, Mike, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how are you?
Pretty good.
I don't know if yesterday you got a chance to watch. I've now made a sport out of it. I watched the Fox coverage of the whole thing because I just enjoyed watching all their heads explode, each one of them.
Right.
And you know who I've learned to hate the most is that snarky Megyn Kelly. Oh, but the worst thing about it was John Dingell. Now, he's been in the Senate since 1955, and if you go to his webpage, he's been trying to get health care pushed through for 19,420 days, otherwise 54 years.
Right, right.
And he was the one who did the Clean Air Act of 1990, the Endangered Species Act of 73. I mean, he's done tremendous strides. And when the bill finally became final, he went up with his gavel and hit the gavel down and said the bill is now final, and it almost brought tears to his eyes. And what does Fox do? As soon as he stood up, they knew what he was going to do, so they went to a rebroadcast of a Mitch McConnell speech.
Right.
It's just, you know, it's, where does human decency come in anymore? You know, are they that morally bankrupt, or is that just a rhetorical question?
Both. Yeah, of course they're bankrupt. Conservatives, Republicans, and anyone who speaks for them or about them in a manner that would indicate they're supportive of Republicans or conservatives, just as bad. That's just the way it is.
Yeah, and it's just, what do you do from this point forward? You know, the one advantage, though, is the Republicans, every single one of them said that they will no longer be bipartisan with the Democrats. So the Democrats should just do anything they want, just push every liberal bill as much as they want. They've got nothing to lose.
Well, the problem with that, of course, and I'm sure you know this, Mike, is that Democrats are not zombies the way Republicans are. There are factions within the Democratic Party. And also factions within elected Democrats, everything from true liberals to real conservatives across the spectrum. The Republican elected officials are not that way. The only reason they're there is because they are good little Nazis who would do exactly what they're told to do by the corporatists. And
Glenn Beck and
well, Glenn Beck and Limbaugh and the rest of these swine. They don't really issue the orders. They are more or less the overseers. They're the ones that crack the whip if the slaves start to drift a little bit outside the boundaries of the plantation. The orders come from the people who pump hundreds of millions of dollars into the election and reelection treasuries of these thugs. The only reason the right wing talk radio and talk television people there is, well, it's twofold: to keep us distracted, and to remind the whores, no offense to sex workers, that are hired by corporate America, that they had better walk the straight and narrow, or they're going to be defeated. Limbaugh or Beck or O'Reilly will start backing a challenger to these right wingers who are not, you know, haven't gone far enough right. So
they just instill the fear in people,
yeah,
is what they do.
Right, exactly. And they keep their followers from ever hearing anything even remotely connected to the truth. And, you know, propaganda works after two decades of spewing, yeah, this garbage into the air. People start to lose their ability, and I'm talking about the right-wing radio talkers. The listeners start to lose their ability to make any kind of decision at all. They just, you know, that's the
term. Look at Jonestown. It's the perfect example.
Well,
you're
right. You're right. When somebody, anytime somebody self-identifies as a ditto head, what they're saying is they can't think. They can't think on their own. If Limbaugh or Beck, not so much Hannity's just a little parrot, but if Limbaugh and or Beck and or O'Reilly disappeared tomorrow, there would be a huge sucking sound caused by the pressure of all these empty-headed, you know, where their brains are, they'd be sucked out. And it would be, they would be imploding, right? You'd hear all these skulls collapse in on themselves if Beck and O'Reilly and Limbaugh weren't around to tell these dumb bastards what to think.
Yeah, you're right, though. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that, is at least the liberal and the progressive movement, they're not, they don't duck step or goose step as
exactly.
the right wing would be.
Exactly.
Everyone thinks for themselves, they have their own ideology, whether it's a little further left, more centrist. I see what you're saying.
Yeah, and even last night you had, I don't know, 22, 24, 25 Democrats, you know, vote no over and over and over again. Hey, listen, I got to leave there. Thanks, Mike.
Okay, thanks, Mike. Talk
all right,
to you later.
Sir. You bet. We'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy.
Progressive Talk. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 25 before the hour. Quick email here from Kelly in Alaska. We are now carried on KUDO in Anchorage, is that right? Kelly writes, Mike, I'm a subscriber and a big fan. As a result of the horrific bloodbath that just occurred in my state today, I think people should boycott Alaska and write letters to Governor Sean Parnell and tell him why you just canceled your summer plans. Then send Governor Parnell postcards from your backup destination. Why? Today, and he wrote this Saturday or Friday. Today, an entire pack of wolves was killed from a helicopter. At least two of the wolves were collared for research purposes. This is the legacy of the crazy woman from Wasilla. She loaded the Alaska Board of Game with science-denying rat bastards that want to kill every predator known to moose and caribou. Wolves and bears are being mowed down in record numbers despite recent surveys indicating that wolf populations we're at 17-year lows in the area of today's merciless and immoral killing. By killing collared wolves, Palin's legacy ensured science would become a casualty as well. Hooray! A two-for-one deal. I wonder how much money just got wasted. It isn't cheap to collar and track wolves in a science-based effort to build priceless databases, but the people in charge just don't care. Anyway, a long time ago, a boycott of Alaska managed to halt the unconscionable aerial wolf control program. But back then, the governor had a bit of integrity and a conscience. Sarah Palin and her replacement, Sean Parnell, have neither. They are psychopaths. Boycotting Alaska is our only hope for change. Kelly in Alaska. Yeah, it's pretty easy to kill a collared wolf. You just get a fix on their position and swoop down and put a bullet in their heads, right? Son of a bitches. Hack is in Oklahoma City. Hey, Hack.
Maybe health care passed because enough Bachman supporters didn't slit their wrists to become blood brothers against it.
Right.
Yes, I became a fan of hers on Facebook and said that, and basically I was just told that I was a moron, and I haven't been able to get back there since. So I went to an alternative site.
Yeah.
Who's smarter, Michelle Bachmann or this turnip? Needless to say, the turnip won unanimously.
Yeah, I'll bet. Oh, God. You know, it's easy to laugh at these people, but I think Prairie 2 is right. They're dangerous. They really are dangerous. Somebody like Bachmann is dangerous. When I see people like her or Newt Gingrich or Sarah Palin or Glenn Beck, it occurs to me that these people really don't have, it's almost like their brains have been sucked out, and what's been replaced, what's been put in there is some kind of a motherboard that's run from someplace else. And the motherboard just, you know, the circuits open and close, and the digits go beep boop boop beep 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 boop 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 beep beep.
Did you happen to see the Family Guy episode where Hannah Montana, aka Miley Cyrus, was actually an android? It's kind of like that.
No, I missed that. As a matter of fact, if I would have seen it, I would have killed myself immediately. Oh, yeah. No, wait, that's what Glenn Beck is going to do. That's right, the suicide boy.
Yeah, you don't want to be like Beck.
No, of course not. A lot of people do, though. Beck is very much like Jim Jones, who led 900 people to their deaths in Guyana. Was it Guyana? Back in the
79.
Beck is of the same from the same mold. He's not very bright himself, but the people he attracts are people who are just desperate to follow something, anything.
Yeah.
They want to do. They just want to be considered alive. They want to be considered noticed. They want to be considered important, if for no other reason that the cult leader will bless them and stroke them and lick them and do those kinds of things, just like Jim Jones, just like.
But you know, this healthcare thing being socialist, I mean,
this is insane.
Marx has got to be tossing in his grave.
Oh my
right
God!
Now.
Oh my God! Anybody with the sense of a doorknob, whenever you hear Beck or any of these people refer to this as socialized medicine, I mean, it's just like somebody dragging their fingers down a chalkboard. It's an insanity, and yet, Hack, that's what these followers. Beck's followers, they just start, their heads start bobbing, and that motherboard starts going off. Beep, boop, boop, beep, 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 boop, 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 boop. And well, they join in the cacophony of mindless sounds. Socialism, socialism, socialism. Jesus.
Well, you know, in the last couple of lines of the Declaration of Independence, I believe it was, the signers pledged their lives, their fortune, their sacred honor, pulled it all in together, and that was socialism long before Marx came onto the scene.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, you don't survive being an individual. Show me an individual. Okay, maybe somebody who lives out in the wilds of uncharted Alaska or someplace in the swamps in Mississippi, but... that's not what society is all about. Society is an interlocking, interwoven, interdependent tapestry of people who say, look, you know, it's just like the old United We Stand, Divided We Fall. We got to hang together or we'll all hang separately. These dumbass teabaggers, they don't even understand what the original patriots and revolutionaries, what they said. None of them were individualists. Yeah. They weren't individualists. They were total socialists, total hang-together types.
Yep.
Oh, my God.
Yep.
But
they're right in that we're being screwed, but I think they're wrong as to who's doing the screwing.
Well, that's true,
and
too.
And, of course, Prairie 2 is always a ray of sunshine in this area.
Yeah, isn't he? Just spreads flowers and bluebirds wherever he goes.
just to wrap it up, Mike, I've got to break out into song.
Okay, go ahead.
Turkey that this health care bill is, I've just got to sing. We pick the smart guy. We pick the smart guy.
All right. Thanks, Zach.
You bet.
Take care. Yeah, I think people are starting to realize that not only does Beck fit the perfect definition of a cult leader, he relishes in it. This is what he wants. And he wants to be able to get his followers to turn to the left, turn to the right, or kill themselves, or drink some kind of toxic drink that will make them all sick and die. Beck is crazy. I'm telling you, this is a crazy individual whose illness has infected how many people? I mean, even people within the crazy conservative nuthouse in this country are starting to distance themselves from Beck. I mean, it's one thing to be a corporatist, fascist, crazy person. It's something else again to be toxically psychopathic, which is Beck. But Beck is literally, there is no question here. There is no wiggle room here. He is Jim Jones, almost incarnate or reincarnate. Jim Jones. This is, he's already alluded to suicide. I think he would be thrilled to take 800, 900, 1,000, 10,000, 15,000 of his cult followers with him on a given day. All of them. There's no question in my mind. That's what, I think that, as a matter of fact, I think that's what his goal is. I really do. I really honestly do. Ah. Scary dude. Arnold is in Durham, North Carolina. Hey, Arnold.
Yeah, you'll see me with the big old wooden spoon mixing that Kool-Aid up, you know. Staring it right on up. Yo, come on up here and get some of this here instead of that bounce.
Hold on, Arnold, wait a minute. I got to do a break. Hold on, stay right there, okay?
All right,
just stay right there because we've got, we just have 8 seconds here. We got to do a break. Stand there with the wooden spoon. No, you have to fight me. No, all right, you have the wooden spoon. I'll have that tin cup. I'll be dipping that tin cup in. Saying, here, step right up. We'll be right back. Before the hour. All right, Arnold's in Durham, North Carolina, talking about stirring the pot.
Yeah, I'll stir that big old vat of stuff up and say, come on up here and get yourself a swing.
Really? These
y'all want to go that way.
And tell me
I'll
I'm wrong.
I'll be the one to mix it up for you.
Arnold.
After watching what happened this weekend in Washington, man, I'm just ashamed of this country.
Arnold.
You know, what happened to John Lewis and the other congressmen and several other black congressmen, it's like going to a Memorial Day service in this country, which many be held, where they respect and honor people like Medal of Honor winners and pull them off the stage or pull them out to the side and wave misspelled signs in front of them and curse at them, mock them, spit on them, call them the N-word. You know, that's what that is just like. You pull yourself a honored person in this country and just treat them like that, you know. Because, and these people are so ignorant, they don't understand what has transpired here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that bad, you know.
Well, you know, these teabaggers are first fools. Secondly, they'll do what they have no argument, none whatsoever. So to start screaming homophobic terms at Barney Frank, screaming racist terms at members of the Congressional Black Caucus, this is all they got. I mean, they don't have anything. These are ignorant fools. These are dumbasses in the purest sense of that word. And eventually, somebody like Beck is going to talk them all into such a bad mental state that they will start committing suicide by themselves. And then maybe, hopefully, Beck will join them.
Yeah, but I foresee some very bad, vicious acts going on behind some of these crazy people. You know, Sarah Palin had them all pumped up toward the end of the election last year, I mean, all back in 2008. And you see, people were just like, you know, people were just walking around with their mouth wide open, looking at these people holler insults at these rallies and just going
berserk.
John McCain couldn't control them. They were just like, you know, I don't know whether he wanted to control them or not, but, you know, it was, you know, he got more than he thought he was going to get when he got Sarah Palin, you know.
Right.
And it was just bad, you know. John Lewis, I call a war hero, who he went through at the Edmund Pettus Bridge.
Sure.
He was a war hero in my eyes.
Sure,
like,
is.
You know?
Sure is. And just by circumstance of geography, since I've lived in Atlanta for almost 40 years now, I know John Lewis. He was my congressman for years. And then when I moved out of Atlanta, into the exurbs, Cynthia McKinney was my congresswoman for years. But John Lewis, I've known John Lewis forever. I've gotten together at little groups, having a cup of coffee or drinking a beer or whatever, and listened to some of those stories firsthand about what he went through with Hosea Williams and Dr. King and Andrew Young and that whole and to have seen or heard about yesterday that they start calling him the N-word and start spitting on him. I mean, that's when I don't know what to do. I mean, I start to thicken up inside my throat, if you know what I'm talking about. I start to feel like Rush Limbaugh about to die on his fat. Only with me, it's rage. I can't deal with that. I just can't, because I know secondhand, not firsthand, because I'm white, but secondhand, I know what these guys went through on the front lines of that human rights movement, and it was horrific. You know, be attacked by fire hoses and dogs and lynching and bullets and guns and knives and clans and crosses and burnings and rapes and murders. Good God! And then to spit on those people, or to call them the N-word. I don't know, man. It's getting weird. Arnold, I got to leave it there. All right.
All right, buddy. We'll see you later.
All right. Thanks. I appreciate it. I'm serious. I just, a lot of people say, it's not your fight, Malloy, you're white. What do you know? You know, you don't know anything. Shut up. Shut up about this. And to a certain degree, that's true. Anything that I get in terms of either compassion or rage regarding the black struggle for decency and dignity and human rights in this country, I get it through osmosis. I get it because other people have shared it with me. I've demonstrated. I've done this. I've done that for civil rights, for anti-war students, yada yada yada. But I've always been protected. I have always been protected. Always, and that's because I've got white skin. In this society, if you have white skin, I don't care. You are ultimately protected. If you are Caucasian, if you are European American, ultimately, you've got that hiding place. I don't care what you're doing. I mean, you can be out demonstrating for this, that, or the other thing. And as soon as you want to rip off your mask and jump back up on the sidewalk, you know, those police go right past you. They're not looking for you. They're looking for dark skin. So, or foreign-looking people. So I don't mean to imply to anybody listening critically that I understand John Lewis's struggle, or any of these people that I've known from living in Atlanta, who were on the front lines of the civil rights movement with the head beatings and the fire hoses and the kicking and the dogs and, you know, no. Because I could always hide. I could always hide in plain view. Now you see me. Now you don't. And John Lewis couldn't do that. So damn the people who treated him with that disrespect. I don't care, you know, what somebody's attitude is. They could, it can be as sick racist as they want. But when you start treating people like John Lewis with that kind of disrespect, I don't know. That's when I feel like reaching for the gun. I'm serious. That's being honest. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.